What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning in to the Producer's Corner with Spud Too Tight. And man, I have a very special show for you today. During my journey as a musician and a music producer, I've always tried to make myself available to everybody, helping each other out and, you know, sharing all the tips and tools I use when producing music and working with artists. On the phone with me, I have an industry veteran who has over 30 years in the music industry as a musician, performer, songwriter, producer, and a recording engineer. He has collaborated with gold and platinum selling artists as well as Grammy Award winning Hall of Fame recipients. He is also CEO and founder of Teach the Dream Foundation, and along with him I have the project coordinator and the board of directors member as well. Please put your hands together and welcome John Seda and Willie Stewart. What's going on, you guys?
Wow, thanks for that introduction. That was a great intro, man.
Oh, thank you, man. Man, you know, I'm just honored to have you guys on the show. The foundation, the mission statement behind it itself, man, was just really intriguing, really inspirational, man. And, you know, I'm an advocate of sharing that knowledge and foundation with everybody that I know of and came across, man. I've just been spreading the word to everybody that I know. You know, for you, John, I mean, you're the CEO and founder of the mission and the foundation. When did you start in the music industry, and what led you to open up a foundation like this?
Well, I've been playing since I was 12 years old. My mother was a guitar player, and she sang in a band years ago, and she taught me how to play guitar. And then from there, I started, and then everything kind of formed into what it is today. I've played with people such as Little Richard in the past and worked with quite a few Rock and Roll Hall of Famers. Matter of fact, we've got a verification tonight that Marty Ballin from the Jefferson Starship is going to sing a song on the project with us. And he's also a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer.
Wow.
And we've got some Grammy winners with us. We have Sammy Velasquez. We have John Blackwell from Prince. And we have also a Full Sail teacher who is on the board of directors, and his name is Juan Covas. He won a Grammy with Mark Anthony in the past. So we have a really, really interesting crew, and everybody's really behind the fact that we want to try to make a change to see if we can bring music back to making money the way it used to.
Wow. It's amazing, man. You know, it's always cool, you know, when you get other musicians, prolific musicians, to come together and, you know, try to spread that knowledge and educate the young musicians as well as seasoned musicians, you know, just developing yourself into what I call a profound musician or artist. You know, that's just phenomenal, man.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And it's been a long journey. It started actually in the year 2000. I was writing the song while I was living in Japan. And it kind of took a life on its own, but in the last 2 years, it actually turned into what it is right now. And after, you know, talking to a lot of people and negotiating with different countries who actually are behind us too, we have Holy Otsuki from Japan, who's with RCA Victor for 30 years. He's behind us. We have the Richard Gresham Record Group out of South Africa, who's looking to license the song. And we have people actually from Russia, from Hitbop Music, and it's just it's been very inspiring. And and I've also, you know, come to an acquaintance with Willie Stewart, who's been a real great asset to what we're doing right now, and we're just moving forward and great, looking for support and trying to spread the word.
Now, Willie, I got a question for you, man. Give me the mission statement behind Teach the Dream. I mean, because there's a lot of foundations out there that offer services of educating the young with music abilities and just furthering that education. Give me some details and specifics. What's behind your mission statement and how it differs?
Well, I think what kind of makes Teach the Dream unique among all the different types of foundations that are out there, and if you stop and Google some, you'll find every different type that all kind of support some of the same things. What makes us different is because we want to approach it to try to reestablish a musical economy because of the way music is today and artists, you know, the pay-for-play phenomenon that's going on. So when we developed our mission, we kept that in mind as kind of like the background of, you know, how we want to move forward with the foundation. So So the first part of our mission is that we want to start educating artists about the business, because a lot of people, you know, get into this industry and they have a little bit of talent, or some of them may have immense talent, and they know nothing about the business aspects of it, and they kill themselves in a musical economy that way, because they give away songs, they let things kind of fly, and people take advantage of that, and you don't have a musical economy that way. The service, it becomes a service-oriented economy, music economy. The second part of the mission statement is we want to promote international unity within the arts by creating something kind of unique that I haven't seen anywhere else, and we're already in the planning stages of it right now, and that's an artist exchange program. You've heard about student exchange programs that happen in high school, where they take a kid out of, you know, an area and have them live in another country with a family or something like that, and they end up staying there for, you know, a semester or so. And they the cultural experience they learn there, they learn about that culture and the economy, and then they take that back to their own country, and hopefully by doing so, you're creating a worldwide international economy, because you're taking, you know, some of the same thought process that we're educating people about here into another country, and letting them know that, look, this is kind of something that will benefit everyone. The third part of the mission statement is to provide counsel on business as well as emotional matters for entertainers and mentors. And I think this is an area that is that John is really, really passionate about, and he can probably tell you a little bit more about, you know, educating artists about the mental aspects of entertainment. John, can you speak on that?
Well, one of the things we want to try to help artists with is the fact that many artists suffer from empathy, and empathy is a feeling that you get, especially when, you know, you're touring or you're writing songs, where you're opening up your spirit. Because in my belief, and I believe you might agree with me on this, that music is a very spiritual, it's a spiritual thing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes some people feel things that they don't understand what it's about. And I've actually helped artists in the last couple of years now, because I've read a lot about it. And I was able to help artists that were, you know, drinking too much and things of that nature, and help them understand why they were feeling this pain that they couldn't figure out. And just a recent topic that was brought to my attention by one of my partners, Ed Werner, he says, you know, you need to also, you know, apply some attention to the part of envy. What happens, you know, sometimes a lot of projects get destroyed through jealousy and envy. And it's interesting, because, you know, usually artists get together and they're really happy about doing things, but when the business side comes in, there's no knowledge of that, and then they become, you know, distrustful, and they destroy projects because of their lack of knowledge. And we want to try to put attention to all those factors to help projects become successful without the intervention of envy or the fact that maybe artist who's a genius type artist, let them understand why he's suffering empathy, and to let them understand that it's a normal thing. It's just that, you know, there's a process that you can do to deal with it, and my experience with it is that once they found out that that's what was bothering them, they actually were able to perform better and carry on their lives in a better way.
Right. So one of the things that we're in the process of doing, as you might have seen in my signature, in some of the emails, I'm a registered nurse, and we have some healthcare professionals that are starting to volunteer, and we're going to try to spur on other professionals in those areas that would volunteer to provide services, counseling services for artists through our foundation. Now back to the mission statement, there are a couple more points in it. The fourth one is to try to spur on and identify mentors in creative areas and engage them to start supporting artists within their community. You know, a lot of people want to give back and they want to help the arts, but they don't know how and where. You know, they see all these different choices, and we want to be the provider of choice, so to speak, for people when they look to, you know, who's going to serve the arts and have the artists' best interests in mind. So we want to start looking to identify those mentors, identify those teachers, and that's kind of what Teach the Dream is about, people who have a love for the arts, and get them involved with our foundation and the artists, you know, whether they be artists here locally, artists nationally, or artists internationally.
And then the last part of the mission statement is one that that I'm kind of passionate about, and that's bringing our arts back to the inner city communities, because you know, a lot of the programs in these schools, they just die out because people don't think that there's any value in them. You know, they look at it and they say, okay, well, what can teaching my kid piano, you know, do for him in the future when the economy can just crash and he, you know, needs a job? Well, you know, we feel that, you know, having these kids appreciate the arts and being involved in them at an early age, you know, I think there will be less crime in the country. I think that, you know, a lot of social ills can be solved with the arts, you know. So I think our foundation is going to be kind of unique in those aspects right there. You know, a lot of people support the arts. A lot of people want to bring money into the arts. But what we want to do is spur on a musical economy and do that with those 5 points there.
It's an excellent plan, man. You know, I can just remember myself growing up, starting recording, late 80s, early 90s, around 88, 89 is when I really started tracking recording. And, you know, around that time, there was no internet. That wasn't, you know, that was unheard of. And a lot of the resources that were supposedly around me weren't really detailed enough to really guide me where I wanted to be in music production. I mean, now there's schools and you have internet and there's a lot of resources, man. But, you know, I think now something like the Teach of the Dream Foundation is a great asset for anyone that has the idea that they want to be a musician full time. And having, you know, your staff and your board of directors, remember, these guys are professional musicians. I mean, so I mean, just having that hands-on experience with a professional alone, I mean, that's just, you know, endless possibilities where, you know, your inspiration go from just learning from these guys and mentoring you. I mean, it's just phenomenal. What a great idea.
Well, thank you. And we also want to do in the future is do seminars where we can travel city to city with some of the artists to do musical seminars and have the artists talk about their stories. Sometimes I call it, in a funny way, I call it their war stories, which, you know, everybody loves to hear. Especially when they, you know, when they, a lot of them are funny. Actually, it's comical, I think, some of them, you know, some of the stories that, you know, people don't realize how difficult it is to be a musician. And everybody looks at the only the one part is when you get up on stage and do the final show. They don't see all the rehearsal and all the hard work and the many hours, you know, working together as a crew. And it's good to, you know, we want to go out there and spread that word and let people know what it's really like to become an artist.
Exactly. Now, for John, man, let's talk about your musical influences, because for me, I, as a musician, as a keyboard player, I play guitar and bass also. I've always had my kind of like superheroes of musicians on my wall, you know, who I just kind of looked up to that were just like phenomenal, you know. So I mean, I think a lot of that passion that I had for being a fan so long, you know, really inspired me to become a professional musician. Who were your influences coming up that really kind of steered you in a direction and gave you that map of success of where you wanted to be as a musician?
Well, my first influence was Jimi Hendrix, who I've got a picture on his, on the wall of him all the time. So when the people walk in, they go, "That's the man," you know.
Yeah. Me too.
another one is Prince. I think he's represented America as like one of the finest musicians that America has to deliver. He also has been an advocate of musicians making money. And he's actually an artist from the people I've talked to, and I've actually worked with him in the past. He actually does his best on his own end to make sure that musicians are well paid and taken care of, and I have a lot of respect for him when it comes to that. I also like Carlos Santana, Eddie Van Halen, and the list goes on. I mean, Luther Vandross, I mean, Patti LaBelle, Cameo. I have a lot of. I don't have one specific style that I like, because I like listening to all types of music. My wife and I, we every once in a while we have a little bit of wine and listen to Pavarotti, you know. So I have a wide range of music I listen to, and when I produce in the studio, I've been doing everywhere from hip hop to country to rock. And a matter of fact, we have an artist by the name of Ashley Shannon who we wrote a country song with. And I'm pretty, pretty honored about this. It won in the state of Florida the best country song. And now it went to Nashville and won nationwide the best country song. So we just won that award a couple of weeks ago for a song that's called Josh's Song. And me, of all people, sometimes I have to smile because I say, I can't believe I won won an award for writing a country song.
Right.
You know? You know, because it's not really my genre of choice, but I, you know, I like music, period, and I think that I think you had, you know, you agree with me. Music is what it is at the moment, and if it pleases you and that's what you like, you know, you're having a good time doing it at that moment, then that's the style you're doing at that time.
Right. I'm a huge advocate, man, for not boxing in music. I mean, what it right. comes out is what it comes out. Is where it becomes corporate is where you try to put it into a category so it becomes radio friendly for the listener. You know what I mean? But a hit song is a hit song, in my opinion.
right, exactly.
You know, speaking of studio, John, you do run your own studio, Rising Sun Music Studios, man, and you sent me some pics, man, of your new remodeling that you've done, and man, that's just phenomenal. I'm a gearhead, so you know, I see all all the Marshall crates and heads you got there, man. It's like, oh right. man, that's candy heaven for a guitar player.
Well, we actually added an extra room. You saw those pictures of the speakers inside that isolated room.
Yes.
Well, I had a friend of mine who came from Puerto Rico, and I have to give him props because he helped me redesign the studio, and we built a new table, and we built an RPG wall with, you know, with diffusers and stuff like that. And the room, we've always had a good sounding room, but now it's sounding way better, which is always good. And I'm always an advocate of whatever I can do to make it sound 1% better, that's 1% better that the mix is going to sound, you know.
Exactly. So. Now, speaking of mixes, man, I mean, you've been recording for over 30 years. I mean, right. analog experience, I mean, that's without a question. But coming into the world of DAW recordings, man, do you have a preference? And if so, give me the pros and cons of both.
Well, I worked with Pro Tools ever since 1995. And as of 2 years ago, I switched over to Cubase. Because the algorithms in Cubase sound way better. And you know what's happening right now with no bad punt towards DigiDesign or anything like that, but the cards are really expensive, and I had to find a way to. I didn't feel like spending another $20,000 to re-up my computer system to another Pro Tools system, so I decided to venture into something new. I'm actually an endorser with Cubase, and I used to represent the product years ago, and as of when they went into Cubase 4.0, they were able to. To route interfaces through the program, and once that happened, it was all over with. And the fact that you can record a 32-bit floating point, it gives you more of a tape sound, and that's what I guess we all search for, is that, you know, that warm, you know, sound that's not so digital edge feel.
Right.
And so that is my preference right now, and so I work with Cubase and Nuendo.
Cubase is cool, man. I ran Cubase for 5 years, from 99 until about 2004 or 2005, and during that time I was running Pro Tools as well. And you know, Pro Tools, you know, I'm a MIDI man, you know, I'm doing predominantly 99% of my recording is all MIDI based,
right,
with a few guitars and bass here and there and vocals, but man, you know, it just, Pro Tools just wasn't as MIDI friendly for me, especially when I wanted to run my VSTs and some of the plugins that I had for Virtual Synth. It, you know, just wasn't really hosting as great, you know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So what are you using right now, Spud?
Man, I'm a Logic Pro user, man.
I know it. I knew you were going to say that. Well, Logic is designed to work, you know, very friendly with VST instruments.
It and is.
It's something I've been considering now, but I think right now what's happening with the new Mac OS system, the Snow, once the new updates come for all the programs, you're going to be able to apply more RAM to Cubase, and a lot of those issues will, you know, become... I think we'll be on the equal playing ground. Obviously, you know, Logic is an Apple program, so they, you know, they have it. There is some favoritism there.
Right. But, you know, it's like for
it's
Logic...
Program. It is a great program.
You know, for Logic, for me, man, it's... Coming from a Cubase interface, I wanted something that was going to be as user-friendly as Cubase. You know, I wanted...
Yeah,
I mean, because Cubase was just like... It was MIDI heaven for me at the time, you know, just be able to have my VSTs and trigger everything. But with Logic, man, I was able to really custom made my own templates the way I work. Because right now I'm running totally everything virtual. I don't use any of my hardware keyboards anymore. I have a list of Motif, Rax, Tritons, Rolands. I have them all. But now I'm running everything with ROM players, and my sample library is just vast, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now, too. I've kept a couple of vintage stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that big fat analog stuff. But the truth is, I rarely use them. I only use them on certain occasions, and I think it's more of a personal preference more than it's easy to use. I prefer to work in the virtual world myself.
Definitely. But what about for your plugins? Are you running hardware? Are you doing software plugins like the Waves SSL 4000 or the...
Well, I'm using the Waves Platinum Bundle.
Okay.
And I'm really happy with the plugins that Cubase has to offer. Matter of fact, the EQ, I've made some comparisons like with the Waves Renaissance EQ and with some of the SSL EQ stuff with the standard EQ that comes from SSL and the plugin they have, the SSL plugin. And we sat down with a bunch of friends and we did what they call an A-B test. And, you know, I guess it's a matter of preference, but I like the fact that you can actually push the highs on Cubase and it doesn't break up and give you that digital edge. It cuts your ears off,
Right.
And when you do that with the Waves program, you'll notice that if you add a little too much highs, it kind of gets really razor bladed, especially the standard plugins that come in from DigiDesign.
Sure. Since you're using Cubase, man, I got to ask, what interfaces are you using for your converters and pre's?
Well, I have a Big Ben clock, an Apogee Big Ben clock. I use a Rosetta 800. I'm also using a RAIDAC card inside, so it takes all the taxing off the CPU.
Sure.
And then I've got a DM1000 mixer. And the DM1000 mixer is basically a Yamaha 16-channel digital board that comes with the same pre's that the DM2000 come with, which are super high quality. I'm using a couple of Vintec Audio X73i preamps and with a Vintec Audio TA609 compressor, which is the same thing as the Neve 609. I'm also using a Max VCCL Waves hardware piece and the 747 compressor graphic EQ. So that's my heaven right there. Between that, I do my mastering, and I use it for tracking. I usually track most of my drums on the DM1000, like I did with John Blackwell, who's done some sessions recently. I'm really happy with the preamps. It makes the drums sound big. It's very clean.
Yeah, you got some nice color there.
Yeah, exactly. So I got a combo of different, color palettes and stuff. And I'm running everything through fiber optics. So basically, the Yamaha boards, you can buy the MY16AT board, which is the audio, what do you call that, the fiber optics board.
Sure.
So I go ping in and out of the board. I run 8 in and out of the Apogee Rosetta, and that gives me enough to route my compressors, my tube compressors and all that stuff, and then work with the plugins online. So I got a hybrid studio, half analog and half digital.
That's the way to go, though, especially with the DAW systems.
Right, exactly. You got to kind of have the best of both worlds so you get that real nice sound.
Right. I mean, like I said, the algorithms are great in Cubase, even with Logic Pro, man. But, I'll still find myself, if I want some color, I usually run to, like, an Avalon 747 for my vocals.
Right, right.
What are you using for mics for your drums? Are you using SM57 Shures or?
Well, I'm using Audix microphones on the toms.
Okay.
B2s on the toms, rack tom 1, 2, and 3, which is the floor tom. I use a Beta 52 on the kick drum. I use a D1 on the top snare and a D3 Audix on the bottom. Sometimes I change them around to a 57. And on my overheads, I do something unique that I've never seen anybody do before. I've got two vintage Groove Tube ND1 tube microphones, and those are my overheads. And that actually works incredibly well because you know how cymbals are. They're bright anyway.
Right.
They're harsh. So it cuts off that harsh high-end sound and keeps it really smooth and silky. And so between the combination of all those microphones, I really get a nice drum sound.
Nice. Man, what a great arsenal!
Yeah, I got. Plus, I got some, a couple C1000s and some SCXs, and one thing I'm using, and I recommend this to guitar players, is that there's a microphone that came out from Audio Technica, which is the 2500, and it's a dual element microphone that has a condenser and a dynamic in it, and when you place that in front of a Marshall, that thing sounds unbelievable.
Wow.
But the great thing about it is not so much that it sounds unbelievable, it gives you the exact sound that amplifier is giving you. And that's a big thing with guitar players,
Right.
They don't want their sound to be recolored as it goes along.
Exactly. So what are you monitoring through, man? What kind of monitors are you running?
Well, right now I'm using Mackie's, the HR-824s. I've been using that for about 3 or 4 years right now.
Those are pretty solid for the low end and mid range. I like them for that anyway.
Yeah, I don't use any subs, and people walk in my room because I got it really well tuned. It's tuned 2020, you know. In other words, it's a straight, very flat room. And people go, "Where's your sub?" I go, "I don't have a sub." They go, "I can't believe it," you know. So they really work really well for that. I'm thinking in the future I want to upgrade. And this is something I've been working on, and no disrespect to Mackie. These monitors have been doing really well for me. But I'm thinking about, in the future, moving up to the HS-80Ms by Yamaha.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Well, because they're a little bit more transparent sounding, and there's not that much low mid-mud. But one thing I found out, just something just happened recently, ever since we built that, do you remember those pictures that Willie sent you?
Yeah.
Of the diffuser in the back? The RPG type diffusers.
Mm-hmm.
My low mid mud is gone.
Oh wow!
Beautiful now. So it's actually become very clear. So you know, it all depends on how your room is tuned, also too.
Right. My room isn't that tuned for acoustics, man. So I rely heavily on my DT770 Pro headphones. Man, for accuracy and translation for other systems, I really can't recommend it. They're pricey, but you know, again, if you're really looking for a balanced mix, and if you really got an unacoustically treated room, those are the ones I would go to get up.
Right, you know, that's a good thing that you bring that up, because that's something that can help a lot of people out there when they're mixing. You know, because you know, people buy their systems at home, and they don't have a treated room. You know, let's say for instance, and I would recommend this to anybody. I do a lot of mixing also on headphones as a reference also. Guys, whoever, you know, you're out there, if you don't have a tuned room, the best way to mix is with your headphones, because that gives you that it gives you the true sound, basically.
Right. They like that low end. Right around that low end mid range is where it starts bouncing all over the room. So
right, exactly.
So man, what is on the musical agenda? John and Willie, I mean, what are the plans for 2010 for the foundation and for upcoming artists that you guys have under your roster and so forth?
Well, right now what we're doing is we're finishing the first Teach a Dream project. And I say the first because we've been discussing it, that hopefully in the future we're going to do a couple of volumes of this. We've experienced that it's a good venue for helping artists to get, you know, launch them on a first-time basis. They get an opportunity, they can write a song about, you know, a tribute to teachers and mentors, and it gives them an opportunity to be on a platform where a lot of people want to hear them, because as I've done this, I've been overwhelmed with the response of how people really care about what we're doing. And it's obvious because, you know, we're talking to you right now, and I'm very honored to be on your show. And so that's what we're going to do. Hopefully, I don't want to put it writing in stone, but hopefully in the next couple of months we'll have the first album done.
Nice.
But if I could interject here just for a second, I don't know if anybody's done this on your show yet, but I wanted to just commend you for the platform that you have, because I've taken some time and listened to a bunch of your other shows, and man, I got to give it up to you. I'm not a tech guy or anything, but I love listening to your show. I'm learning so much listening to the different interviews. So I just wanted to commend you for having such a great show too, bro.
Oh man, thank you, man. I take compliments all day. Keep them coming. No, man, again, it was just an honor having you guys on the show, and I really believe in the mission statement behind Teach the Dream, and it's really going to blow up, man. Once everybody catches on and really smells the coffee and really gets that vision where they want to be, I mean, that's just going to be the go-to site, in my opinion. So,
thank you. I appreciate that, man.
Well, man, you guys got to come back, man, and talk about your new endeavors. You definitely got a spot here at the Producers Corner. I would love to have you guys back as my guest, a reoccurring guest, so...
I want to say one thing before this. You know, your program's called The Producer's Corner, right? Well, the name of the group that's doing Teach the Dream is called The Producer's Heart and Soul.
Oh, there you go.
So we got something in common. In fact, we should get you to come and perform on the record.
Oh, man, I love it, man. Let's do it.
We got to make an arrangement. You hear that, guys? I made a commitment.
Hey, anytime, man. I love the jam, so that's what I live for. So anytime you guys are ready.
That'll be cool. That'll
work there.
We can make some arrangements to make that happen.
Oh, definitely. Well, I'll be waiting.
Okay.
Sounds well, you good. Guys, take it easy and have a good one, man.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks
appreciate
for having
it. Thank you for everything. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye. And a big thank you and a shout out to John Cena and Willie Stewart for coming on the show and sharing the information about Teach the Dream. You know, it's not every day, man, that we have the opportunity and the resources to really research and get more information about our career path as musicians. Now that there's internet and there's so many other things available for us, this is the opportunity now for every upcoming musician and even seasoned musicians to check it out, man. They do have an excellent website for resources and more information about what it is they're doing, and it's www.teachthedream.com. And again, it's www.teachthedream.com. And I want to thank John Cena and Willie again for coming on the show and sharing their information and knowledge on the recording side as well, John. I mean, the guy's just got a tremendous amount of experience as a musician and as a recording engineer, and I would love to have them back and talk about the new endeavors. For my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up as well at www.spud2tightmusic.ning.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so if you have an iTunes account, or even if you don't have an account for iTunes, you can just open up an iTunes player, go to the home section in iTunes, and type in the Producer's Corner. Click on my image and you'll have a list of my interviews on iTunes as well. For questions and suggestions, hit my email up at spud2tight@gmail.com. And again, that's spud2tight@gmail.com. I want to thank everybody for listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.